Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Dr. Edwin Lohman, who is Business Unit Director at Quintic. And today we're going to talk about the keys to smart and efficient multi-resource scheduling. Now, you know, as we all know, supply chains are comprised of many different resources, whether they're people, you know, manufacturing equipment, transportation assets, and so on. And really trying to align the planning and scheduling of those resources is critically important to, you know, making sure your supply chain is running as efficiently as possible, as cost efficiently as possible. But it's a complex, you know, puzzle. It's a complex challenge to solve, particularly, you know, the more resources that you have. So, you know, very privileged to have with us today, again, Dr. Lohman, who is an expert in this area and can share some insights in terms of, you know, some of the key factors that companies ought to consider and think about in terms of doing multi-resource scheduling in an efficient and smart manner. I'm just trying to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you've got a question for Edwin as we're having that conversation here, you can do so via the Q&A button, and I'll keep an eye on it. If it's a good and appropriate question, I'll certainly weave it into the conversation. And with that, Edwin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Adrian.
Well, you know, as being a first-time guest, before we dive into the topic, I always like to ask my guests, you know, how and why they got involved with this industry to begin with. So why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Quintic?
Yeah, thanks, Adrian. Well, it goes back a couple of years. So I think that, hey, in college, I already enjoyed the topic of operations research and sort of using all that math to make better decisions, right? And I stuck around after college a little bit longer to dive deeper into the topic during my PhD. But I quickly found that, hey, the theoretical side of it is fun, but I want to see it applied in real life. So right afterwards, I joined sort of the leaders in the business to use this knowledge and start improving the planning at the big retailers, the airlines, the utility companies. And that's what I've been doing ever since at Quintic. Right now, I'm actually responsible for for all our North America implementations that deal with workforce planning, that deal with product transportation. That means that I get to improve planning and scheduling at quite a diverse set of companies. If I now just travel and I see people handling bags at the airports, or I see a truck driving by, it's kind of cool to remember that, hey, we planned those trucks and those people. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think it's similar. I mean, I know when I really, you know, started getting involved with supply chain logistics myself, coming on 18 years now, you can't help but kind of look around when you go to the supermarket, or when you're looking at trucks on the freeway, or if you're driving by an ocean port and see those containers out there, to really have a different perspective on the world around you. And certainly operations research is, you know, an area that's historically has always been, you know, important to, you know, in terms of underpinning, you know, a supply chain management. And it's arguably becoming even more important today as, you know, the amount of data, the amount of variables and complexity continues to increase, which I guess, you know, brings us to, you know, the topic at hand here. So I want to start with just a very basic question, because I mean, some folks may not have heard of, you know, multi-resource scheduling and planning, or they might have, you know, preconceived ideas about it. But, you know, what is multi-resource, you know, scheduling? Why has it been important?
Yeah. And I think, Adrian, that people hear about planning and scheduling and do planning and scheduling in all kinds of ways. And I think that in a lot of industries, the way to create a good plan is hard, but it's also rather one-dimensional. So if you look at some of the manufacturing solutions, for example, hey, I have a number of machines. I need to route my products through those machines, but it's really just the orders and the machines that you're scheduling. So it's really just that sort of one-to-one. Or I have just tasks that need to be executed by people, and I'm trying to figure out who that best person is. And that's sort of the one-dimensional normal scheduling. I'm not saying that can't get involved, that can't get difficult. I mean, if skills and production rules, et cetera, get involved, it can become difficult. But if you start adding a dimension, so if you see that it's not just people that you're trying to scale, it's not just machines, not just trucks, but once it gets a more complex combination of resources that's required to fulfill the tasks, then you get into multi-resource scheduling. You're adding a dimension. And to give you maybe one or two examples of that, if you look at a TV show, right? I need to have the right people, the right on-air talent. I need to have the right camera people. I need to have the right equipment as well. So it's not just people that you're scanning to a show. No, you're also making sure that your equipment is available. In a similar way, I can only repair this gas line if the right people with the right certifications are available, if I have my permits sorted out, if I have my specialized equipment available, right? So it becomes about vehicles, it becomes about other equipment, it becomes about people, it becomes about all of these things at the same time. And that's that multifaceted approach. That's what we consider multi-resource scheduling. And as you see, that's quite a broad topic.
Yeah, no, those are great examples. I mean, when I tend to think of it as well, you know, I've seen this happen, you know, to me at a few times with traveling, where sometimes the airplane is there, but the crew isn't there, or the crew got delayed for some reason, or maybe they ran out of hours and they couldn't fly anymore. So now my flight got canceled or postponed, right? So now there's an example of, you've got an airplane that's a piece of equipment that needs to be scheduled, right? But then you've got the on-airplane crew, you know, the pilot and the flight attendants, and then you've also had the baggage handlers, you know, so trying to, you know, schedule and plan all those pieces together is a complex puzzle that I think for those of us that travel a lot, you know, probably have experienced, you know, what happens when those things fall through. You know, same thing with even just simple trucking, right? You may have, truck drivers that have schedules and have certifications, and then you have to actually manage the equipment itself, whether it's the trailers or the power units. As you mentioned, you know, the more resources involved, right, the more complex this puzzle, this challenge, you know, becomes. I mean, mm-hmm. Can you provide some examples? I mean, maybe, you know, some of the, we talked about a few already here, but any more you want to add in terms of just to illustrate kind of the type of complexity that's involved, you know, as you multiply or expand the number of resources?
Yeah. And of course, I'm a math guy, right? So I like to just look at the number of different options. So, suppose you just have these five tasks that you want to put on five different people, right? So very simple, that one-dimensional approach that I was talking about before. Even just that five tasks and five employees, that already gives you like thousands of different options, thousands of different schedules that you could want to evaluate to find the most effective one. But if you now start adding a dimension to it, if you start adding, hey, I don't only want to assign these five tasks to five different people, but I also have five different pieces of equipment that I'm dealing with, it becomes not just thousands. It's already hundreds of thousands of different options that you need to look at. It explodes. And I think that's just... that's just with the five tasks, five employees. Hey, and every company that we are talking to that are listening to this to the show, it's way, way, way more. And I think that when the number of employees, when the number of equipment goes into the thousands, then you just can't comprehend it anymore. And that's, you can have the very best planners and schedulers, but that just goes beyond the capability of any human mind. And maybe that's sort of the math side of it, right? But if you look at the practical side, I think you just used an example out of from an airline, right? one particular interesting case that I found was about scheduling the delivery of your meals on board a flight. I mean, those meals, they are not made all that far in advance, right? So they are actually coordinating the production of that with the flights that are coming in, but then also need to take into account that not every truck can deliver to the same size of plane, right? Bigger plane needs a bigger truck. And you have all the dynamics of a flight schedule that changes back and forth, that a flight gets delayed, right? So it's about scheduling those people. It's about scheduling then the trucks with it, the production with it. And that just gets an immense problem. And what you then see is that a system, if you optimize it, a change of 20% in your KPIs is not exception. That's sort of the rule that you're going to get out of it by looking at it in a more comprehensive way.
Yeah. No. Again, I think based on what you just said, I think it's clear that it doesn't take much to for the complexity to get so out of hand that if you try to do it manually, if you try to do it with spreadsheets, at best you're going to be sub-optimizing the result of what you're able to do, and more than likely you're really going to drop the ball on really trying to do this as efficiently and cost effectively as possible. Mm-hmm. So kind of getting to the title of the episode, in terms of some of the keys to smart and efficient, resource planning, multi-resource planning. I mean, when you have to plan and schedule different types of resources, I mean, what are some of the key factors that, companies and folks need to keep in mind to, to keep them all aligned and synchronized?
Yeah, I think actually the main thing that I would advise is also sort of a no-brainer. You want to schedule these resources together. And the funny thing is that even though, hey, that sort of sounds like a no-brainer, it's not something that seems to be common practice yet. So in the end, if you look at scheduling multiple resources at the same time, there are a couple of different schools of thought, right? So in a lot of cases, the process that is followed is actually just, hey, let's first schedule the most constrained resource, probably also actually your most expensive resource, but then use that as input for creating the schedule of your other resources. So, for example, in your trucking example, it would be, hey, let's first make sure that we have a plan that works for all of our trucks, and then figure out how we're going to take care of that with our drivers. And that can actually be a good approach, but only if the resource that you're scheduling later on are actually rather flexible. So, hey, I create a plan for my trucks, and I can then do anything I want with the drivers to make sure that schedule is going to work out. But if you look at the more classical multi-resource scheduling cases, then the problem becomes that if I create a plan that really works well for my equipment, it will quickly break down once I try to schedule my resources against it. When you start to get into these specialized resources with certain skills, that have certain qualifications, right? So the problem is that if you scale them in separate steps, you need to be very sure that the plan that you create at step one is still going to work out for the other resources downstream, so that you don't get into this phone call type of situation where, hey, you create a schedule for this resource, but now it doesn't work for me when I'm scheduling the next step. So combining it, especially if these resources really influence each other and are both very restricted, becomes the key part to provide a good schedule. And I think that one of the problems right now is that isn't the case yet, right? So you are still scheduling all of these things separately from each other. I think that getting all of that information in one system is actually step one for a lot of companies that I work with, that I see from the inside. And then once you have all that information available in one place, okay, now we can start using all of that information, the big data that you referenced early in the podcast, and make sure that we start optimizing against it. Then we sort of move away from the classical, hey, rescheduling in Excel, or yeah, I have a plan, but now to reserve my resources, I need to go to this Outlook calendar to take care of that resource. So bring it all together. So you then have the option of using that data to optimize against it. Is, I think, in the end, a simple step, but a very important step to go towards successful multi-resource scheduling.
Yeah, no, very interesting. So it sounds like, you know, just to paraphrase a little bit about what you said, is that, you know, historically, you know, companies have taken really a siloed approach to doing multi-resource, you know, scheduling. And in some cases, as you noted, you know, that might be an okay approach, right? But, you know, I think arguably today, you know, more and more that siloed approach is really flawed for a variety of different reasons. Now, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what I heard from what you said, and maybe you want to expand a little bit on this, it sounds like the traditional hurdles around this was one, that companies didn't have all of the data and information in a single place to be able to do this in a more integrated, holistic fashion. And then, you know, number two, that they probably lack the technology, you know, the brains, if you will, the optimization capabilities, the algorithm, so forth, to actually then be able to handle, you know, this complex problem. So are those kind of what you see when you go to companies, that, you know, number one, they're missing having that data in a central place, and then having the power, you know, to actually do something with that data?
Yeah, no, I think that you're completely right there, Adrian. It is oftentimes there are some form of a solution in place, and for some companies, this is sort of, these systems are dating back to sort of the start of doing all of this electronically, right? So quite decades old in some cases. But even in the case where they've already moved to a more more advanced system, it still remains point solutions. It still remains, hey, I'm trying to solve this one problem with my crew. So that's where I'm going to focus on. That's why I bought a buy a solution for, and I'm solving that. And then separately, oh, but I actually also have a problem here in a different spot about the planning my trucks, planning my airplanes, anything, and I'm going to solve that instead of thinking, hey, I want to make sure that I get the most out of my resources together. I want to run an efficient operation. And the way to run an efficient operation is to get a planning platform in place and making sure that everything talks to each other. And we have the information in one place. That's what we look at. And that's what we optimize from. That's where we create all our schedules. Instead of one schedule out here, let's print it out, hand it to the other guy that puts it in the next system, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, I had the opportunity to speak and attend your user conference earlier this year, your world tour conference over in London, and your CEO spoke about, you know, moving from, you know, big data, you know, to big decisions, right? And I think what we just talked about here, I think, is a good example of that, in terms of, you know, really it is this continuum, right? And you can have the, you know, one problem is having, you know, this fragmented view of data. But even just having the data in one place is a move toward the ability to make smarter decisions. But then you need, you know, the optimization, the analytics, and so forth to really, you know, truly, you know, get you there.
Yeah, I think that the big data is one step, and I think that a lot of companies are moving in that direction. You're completely right, and then it is, oh, but now with all of this information, what I'm going to do about it, right? So who is going to actually use all of this data? And there's a lot of hidden value in there that you want to get out of there as a company.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, you work with a lot of companies in a lot of different industries, and we kind of, you know, through our conversation here, we've kind of given some examples of kind of the multi-resource scheduling, you know, problem. I mean, can you share with us some examples of how companies, perhaps in different industries, are achieving, you know, better results via more efficient multi-resource planning?
Yeah, and then you're right, it's quite diverse. I mean, multi-resource scheduling is not really tied to a specific industry, right? It's an issue that comes across in planning and in scheduling in general, the whole width of that concept. And one place where I see it coming up more than anywhere else is in any operation that has a reliance on field operation. So the moment that you start adding the concept of, hey, I need to get from location to location, on top of, hey, I need skills, I need equipment, I need people, that is suddenly, that sort of multiplies the benefit that you can get out of planning this accurately, planning this optimally. I think most of them call it windshield time, right? Anytime that I'm behind my windshield, then driving, I'm not making any money. I'm not doing anything useful. And that's what you want to get rid of. So in for example, the utility space, which of course relies very heavily on work in the field, they have a lot of different types of personnel with a lot of different skills and very importantly also certifications, right? They need to have certifications to work on certain project on gas lines, on electricity, etc. If you then start adding if construction or maintenance is involved, then scheduling of that of those very limited resources actually makes it a very interesting situation. I mean, this equipment is not cheap, so you want to utilize it most efficiently. But on the other hand, your people are also very important to your company, especially if you need to train them. Those rules, those regulations, then start adding just the human factor of, hey, person A is on leave, person B has a day off, person C is sick today. Makes it an interesting puzzle. And I think that telecommunications, security, I mentioned catering before, facility management, those are all kinds of places where this is really a challenge. And it's a challenge in your long-term planning. So how am I going to execute, hey, next month or a couple of days from now? But it gets multiplied once you start looking in day of operation, when sort of your plan for a part, hopefully not that much, but for a part goes out of the window, right? Because things keep changing. That's I think where the main applications are, and where you can make your company a whole lot more efficient by making sure a good system is in place.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think something you said earlier kind of stuck with me, which is when you said taking the siloed approach or iterative approach. You may start with scheduling your production equipment, let's say, or your most expensive assets, so on and so forth. But then that assumes that you've got like full flexibility with everything else that follows. Mm-hmm. And I think on the people side, I think we tend to think about that in many ways. But when you really think about the people as a resource, and you really look at what's all involved around the human resource, right? When you've got skills, certifications, vacation schedules, so on and so forth. I mean, there really are so many variables that are associated with humans, with people, mm-hmm. Around a particular skill set that we are not we're not all interchangeable, right? So you do have constraints on the people side based on the particular skills or their availability from a scheduling standpoint. Certainly in driving, you've got hours of service. You may have some people that might be able to drive smaller trucks but not larger trucks, or they might be hazmat certified they may need to renew their permit. So many things go on there that I think we sometimes lose sight of the people side of things. You agree with that?
Yeah, no, and in the end, hey, you could make your employees the most flexible resource and just make them follow the rest of the plan, right? I mean, of course there is flexibility there, but do you want to do that? I mean, for your people are your company. You want to make them productive, but you also want to be a really good employer for your people. And I think that also one case that I'm seeing right now is a company where we actually are planning a lot of things at the same time, but now starts to think about, hey, I want to actually explicitly in my optimization and in my scheduling take care of my employee happiness. So the moment that you've already looked, the moment that the planner is already sort of boggled with the different options that are out there and creating a schedule that will even work, that tends to be not as much of a focus on, okay, but I want to make sure that my employees do exactly what they like doing. But now, if you take care of a lot of those decisions automatically, then suddenly you can take a little bit more of these things into account. So you can now say, hey, as an employee, I can do these five different jobs, but I prefer doing job number one, right? Or, hey, I know that I can work any shift, but I actually prefer having Thursday nights off because that's when my kid plays baseball, right? So you can start to take those things into account, making your employees happy and therefore also getting a better end result. Happy employees are good employees.
That's great. And I think a lot of companies, you're right, are beginning to focus on the employee satisfaction, particularly, you know, when it comes to retention and the fact that, you know, finding great talent and resources these days is a challenge, particularly for some of these skilled, employees. So let's shift now from kind of talking about the people side of things to obviously technology. Yeah. And emerging technologies, I assume are playing in a role in this area. You know, starting with mobility, I mean, how does mobility add, efficiency to multi-resource scheduling?
Yeah, and I think it adds a ton of efficiency already with any scheduling, right? And the more complex the problem becomes, the more valuable it becomes too. I mean, when I was a kid, right? I still love going to music festivals, but the way that I would use that, I would talk to my friends. I would say, hey, let's meet each other at the festival, but hey, let's try to meet each other at 11. And if we don't make it for some reason, train delay, whatever, then we'll try again at 2 p.m. or at 6 p.m., right? So we would have all these contingency plans in place just because we had no way of contacting each other. We didn't have mobile phones. I mean, it's a while ago. But, I mean, that was... Nobody understands that anymore. That was the case, right? So right now you just send a message, I'm delayed, and everybody knows it. And that's the same thing with scheduling. I now, as a planner, know immediately that somebody got delayed, that somebody needs a little bit more time to complete a job or calls out sick. I have that information not just on a piece of paper in an email. Because of using mobile phones, I have it available in my system. My system immediately knows these five tasks that this guy is supposed to execute are not going to happen right now. They're going to happen a little while later. Maybe that's okay. Or maybe I want to optimize it and find a different place to put all of those tasks. So I think that the mobility factor really eliminates the phone calls. It eliminates any misunderstandings. Brings also a lot of information. That's maybe what you referred earlier. It's a lot of information. So you do need a way to actually deal with all of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, as we all know, supply chain management is all about risk management. It's all about dealing with exceptions, right? Because nothing ever goes perfectly according to plan. And I think from the mobility side and, I think even from a broader umbrella, all the buzz and discussion around Internet of Things is really about being able to see those exceptions and see those changes and being able to react to them and respond to them in a more timely and efficient manner. And which brings me to the other emerging technology that's a lot of folks are talking about today, which is, predictive analytics, right? Yeah. I mean, does predictive analytics have a role to play in multi-resource, scheduling? Yeah, particularly as it relates to, things like field operations and workforce planning?
Yeah, and I think that's the human factor again, right? I think predictive analytics definitely has a big future, and I think some fields are already applying this, right? So in some manufacturing environments, I already see this happening, that they figure out how to better estimate the durations of their tasks, duration of their changeovers, etc., based on the information that they gathered in the past. But I think that the human factor of scheduling people makes it becomes even more important, just because, well, a machine is a machine and it will sort of behave the same way. where for humans it gets a little bit more fuzzy. I think that if you look, for example, at if you look at your data and you do a little bit of analytics on it, you can actually see that, hey, if John is present on a certain job, then that job tends to go faster a little bit. Or, hey, this task doesn't take 2 hours, which we plan for. No, it takes either 1 hour if condition A is satisfied, or it takes 3 hours if condition B is satisfied. But I think that that type of information, having it available, means that you can feed it in your planning, so that the next time you make your plan, you can actually account for the 3 hours or the 1 hour instead of the generic 2 hours, right? So I think that that's one side of it. You can, in your planning, make way more precise estimations, automatic estimations, than what is being used in a lot of places right now. And one of the factors that I see as well is having that information available and having the sort of cold hard data makes conversations a whole lot easier. So if, as a planner, you talk to the crew chief and you say, hey, this is the plan for today, and the crew chief says, no, I don't think that works, or we need more time. Okay, let's grab the data, right? Let's see how it's, let's look at the data, let's see how long this usually takes. And then you start talking about real information instead of talking about feelings and thoughts and sort of the fuzzy part of it. So I think that in multi-resource scheduling, I think that all of that data that's being compiled, all of the data that's being gathered, is really useful in predicting the future, in predicting what the future is going to look like. And as soon as you can get planning systems to start learning those traits and get them into the decision support system or into optimization, I think that you'll see another step in the quality of your plan. But I also want to say that I don't think that's step one, right? I think step one is making sure that you have your data in one place. Step two is making sure that you can use that in planning and optimization, and then refining it and further improving it in the predictive analytics. So I think that that's a great future, you can't just do that and not take care of the other things I mentioned.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, certainly you don't want to put the cart before the horse on these things. You really have to kind of build a foundation to be able to do that. And I think, you know, when you were talking there, I think you really just underscored the importance of really providing that continuous loop or that feedback loop between the planning side and what's happening in actual real time and or near real time on the execution side, and really providing that feedback loop to continuously improve the validity and real world applicability of the plans that are being produced. So again, yep. Going back to what we talked about with mobility or Internet of Things, you know, is really taking that information that's coming out, you know, once the execution is taking place, and really feeding that back into the planning side. There is one more technology. I mean, going back to what we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, the more resources involved, the more complex this becomes, you know, the fact that, you know, very quickly, you know, it becomes impossible to really do this manually or with spreadsheets. I think one of the constraints early on, and I know this is something I've been talking about and writing about, is that, you know, early on, some of the constraints was, even if you wanted to do this, however, you know, take a more holistic integrated approach, it was really difficult because from a computing power standpoint, you know, it might have taken you hours or days to try to figure this out. But I think because of cloud computing and everything happening around cloud, that's opened the door for companies and technology providers to really enable this more integrated, holistic approach to, you know, planning and scheduling. Do you agree with that? Do you see cloud computing really being a key enabler here as well, moving forward to enable the solving these more complex puzzles?
Yeah, I think that there are two sides to solving a complex puzzle like this. So the first side is indeed just brute power, right? And that's what you're referring to, the cloud computing, the distributed optimization. Those concepts, I think, allow you to be a whole lot faster. But if you then look at hey, we've all heard the stories, right? That hey, they're solving this problem. You need as many computers as there are atoms in the universe, and right? Everybody uses that all the time. But so you can't just use horsepower, all right? You need to know how you actually use all of that horsepower. So I think that having technology in place that knows how to handle that, knows how to use it optimally, so that it's not just about brute force, but it's about being really smart about solving the problem and then giving it a lot of horsepower. I think that's the way of doing it. If you look at chess computers way back when, or even lately the Go computers, they probably, if you would have gone back 30, 40 years and used today's technology, they still wouldn't have won, right? It's because we made all kinds of great progress in research and how to do these things, and now we have the horsepower. So I think it's a combination of the two. If you can combine those, then yeah, now finally we can start solving these problems better and better.
That's a great point. It makes sense when you say it, but I think it's a point that isn't discussed very often, right? Because I think it is you could immediately, to your point, it's kind of like the old days, right? Just throw more bodies at the problem, right? Yeah. I mean, I think what I heard you say is, you know, just because we now have to kind of exaggerate a little bit, near infinite computing power, it doesn't mean that you just throw more computing power on it. Yeah. You really need to take a smart approach and really think through the problem to realize what's the smartest approach to solve the puzzle at hand. So I think that's some great insight and thought there. Edwin, we're running short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question. Sure. As a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions should companies ask themselves to assess whether their multi-resource planning and scheduling capabilities are aligned with leading practices?
I think it is. That's going back to a couple of things I mentioned along the way. It is, hey, do I have my information in one place? Do I see people scheduling over email and with Excel? I mean, if that's the case, then you're immediately sure there are things to improve, unless it's really just scheduling the five people and the five tasks that I was talking about. So I think that's really the key question. Then the other thing is, do I actually know what the quality of my plan is for tomorrow? So, or am I only looking at reports in my rearview mirror? I actually saw this show. It was a couple of days ago, and I shamelessly admit that I watched a show called The Prophet, right? And it actually had this cupcake shop that they were trying to improve. And he asked the question, hey, what is the price of one cupcake? And the owner had no clue. Had no clue what it costs to make one cupcake. And I mean, it's the same here, right? It is, what's the quality of my plan? Do I know right now what my utilization of my employees is going to be? Do I know how much overtime I'm going to pay next month? Having all of that information available, if you don't have that information available, then I'm sure that it can also be improved big time. Because you first need to measure it before you can even improve it, right? So if you're basing that all of that just on reports, just looking back, okay, that's another indicator that it would be a wise decision to look into it.
Yeah, great point there at the end. I think your last point there, I think suggests that having the right KPIs in place, right, and then being able to track that to be able to answer those questions that really you should be able to answer, right, if you're in that role. And I think a lot of companies, you're right, are just not able to answer that accurately these days. Edwin, like I always say at the end of all our programs, we always just manage to scratch the surface on this topic. But I think we hit on a lot of the key themes and topics and food for thought for our audience here. So thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Thanks for your time, Adrian.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question or a comment for Edwin, you can, again, find this episode on talkinglogistics.com, post your question or comment there, and I'm sure that Edwin would be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.